Welcome to Audible Interlude, a G.I. Joe podcast. I am your host, Dave West, codename Phantom Troublemaker.
Aliens, venom, and a polar bear. I don't wrestle clean and I don't fight fair. You'll leave the ring in an urn. I'm codename Legion Cub, the Cobra Intern.
That's a lot to follow up. That was amazing. I am Chris Scott. I'm going by Mr. Grindhouse tonight because this is my wrestling name, I guess. And I'm a guest host tonight to hopefully lay the smacketh down on some G.I. Joes and Cobras. We'll see.
That's right. You heard that man right. It is time once again for the Audible Wrestling Federation Audible Rumble. 30 characters enter and only one shall leave victorious. But before we get to that Audible Rumble, we got a little business we got to take care of. You can follow us wherever you listen to your podcast. Click that follow button. Be sure you subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and most importantly, share this show everywhere you can. Get on the show socials, tell your friends about it, let the Joe fans know. The only way we can grow is with your help. Follow us on Instagram at Audible Interlude Podcast. While you're there, check out the pinned stories. Get yourself some Audible Interlude merch from our TeePublic store. We got a lot of different shirt designs. The Cobra Intern shirt still selling better than anything else. And if we see you at a live event wearing some of our merch, you'll get some free swag. So Audible Interlude Podcast on Instagram, and check out the pinned stories. Also, while you're there, if you want to join the Audible Army Facebook group, shoot us an email and we'll add you to the group. We do polls and stuff there. They have a lot of input on what happens in the shows. You can catch us live on the Needless Things YouTube channel. Tons and tons and tons of toy reviews, including, much to my surprise, a review of the new McDonald's changeables. I thought, why not? Throw it up there on the channel. But also, you can catch us live alternating Mondays. Our next live show is February the 2nd, 8 p.m. EST. Put it on your calendar and join us for the fun. All right. With all of that out of the way, first of all, Chris, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Of course. It's always a good time. You know, I enjoy hanging out. You know, it's going to be a good time. I'm excited. You got you talking G.I. Joe and wrestling. Like, come on. How could I say no?
Right. Well, and that's the fun part is, you know, for the most part, you've been on kind of talking about what you've been doing, which we're going to do a little bit of tonight. But really, you kind of just get to hang and have fun tonight. Like, it's less business and more just hang, which is always nice to have the opportunity to do. But before we get to that, tell us, World War Hell, what's going on and what else are you working on?
Mostly just World War Hell right now, getting everything, you know, all the little like bits and pieces in the background, getting everything done. I just talked to my production manager, Bill Raleigh, who I just introduced on the last update, former Hasbro production manager. He did like, he was in charge of Ghostbusters and like, he's done a lot of really cool stuff. Like this dude makes actual like Muppets and puppets, like genuine. He's who like made the prototype Cookie Monster back when they did that first HasLab. Super cool. So seeing him and like doing those chats with him and seeing all that, it's just really neat. Like he had Kermit and, you know, just so cool. And like, you know, he did the proton pack for Ghostbusters on that HasLab. He was in charge of that. And so good hands, you know, we're in good hands, and we went over all of the files a little while ago, about a month ago, because we're at that kind of like where the factory's like, hey, this, and then we go back and forth, like, you know, tweak this, like they wanted to change a few things. And I was like, that's not, you know, authentic to the real weapon or, you know, what have you. So we had to make sure everything was right. We had a few issues with the sword getting it perfect, but now we're good to go. And now I'm just really working on packaging. I've been kind of just nose to the grindstone, you know, knocking out packaging. I'm working on Captain Winchester today. So it's been pretty fun.
Has the schedule been roughly lined up with what you expected it to be?
We've been pushed a little more than I want. I'm still hoping, you know, that we can still deliver when we, you know, had said like November. And I'm really wanting that. But we got to see, but like, getting everything, the factory stuff's just been slower than I anticipated, like going back and forth with that. And so I'm hoping to have a check model by Toylanta is what my goal is. And that's the first thing we have right before we tool. It's where they 3D print everything. And just, even though like I've 3D printed, these will be like the actual factory files that now move and I can play around. And this is where you really got to be like particular going through every little like, don't miss anything because you want the best figure you possibly can get. Just make sure everything's before you even get to tooling. And that's where we're kind of right now. So I'm hoping we're still on schedule for the November because I really would love to have figures before Christmas this year. And, you know, I think we should be okay still. If everything kind of works out like, you know, it is, we should be good.
That's amazing. And look, as we all know, you know, cautiously optimistic is the best way to be. There are plenty of O-ring projects and other independent toy projects. And that factory thing that you mentioned, that's what always comes up is the back and forth of we need to make this adjustment. And then how long is it before they get back to you with, okay, there's that adjustment. And then is it, well, no, I didn't mean adjust it that way. I meant adjust it this way. And it's just that exchange of communication just takes time. It's just how it is.
It does. And it's, you know, it's been good though, because I've had a lot of time to work on and kind of perfect the packaging as best as I can. And that's just been so much fun. You know, like when we did the Kickstarter, you know, I showed off like, this is going to be the general idea of what the packaging is going to be like, or this is kind of a mock-up. But I have like some actual, like, I'm going to have at Toylanta printed prototype packaging so people can actually like open it and look at it, and it won't have the figure in it, but it'll still be like an empty box. Actually, one second, I will show you one because we're right here. I printed one as a test because that's another fun part is going through and making sure everything just looks right. You know, you look at the, you know, on Photoshop or anything like that on your computer for so long, you're like, this is perfect. And then you print it and you're like, oh, this is wrong. I got to tweak. So you know, physical thing. But I know there's one people have been looking for a while. So this is
pretty fun. Man.
And there's no wear and tear yet. I've been just doing it as like kind of just clean for now. Just, you know, make sure everything's perfect. You know, it's going to have the pack out of every figure with what it comes with. It's going to have its faction here, almost kind of like a file card to an extent, because it, you know, being a movie style, we're going to have our synopsis, you know, our credits. There's some movie quotes here, which are pretty fun. And you're on one of them. I got to show you the one. I have one of your quotes. I got to show it to you. Yeah. I'll show you later. But here, of course, the fun part. So got the tape. So you'll have your figure in there. So that's going to be super fun. And I want to make sure everybody knows to read all of the fine print when they get a chance, because it's really dumb. And I just had fun writing it all. But yeah, we're just going to have, you know, same style as Necromancer. The few people who got those know how fun that is. So.
Well, and for anybody that's listening and not watching, this is not, you know, we're not talking about blister cards here. We're talking about full box VHS style packaging. It's part of the product. Like it's part of your signature is how I look at it. Cause I often say when I'm reviewing stuff, I'm like, ship it to me in a bag. I don't care. But when it's above and beyond like that, when it's something that like the I've got those VHS boxes up on my shelf behind the figures.
Yeah,
you can't not display those. So that kind of stuff, I love it. And yes, I am the guy, you know, going back to like cassette and CD days, I read the liner notes. So I'm going to be reading every word that's on.
I love it. I can't wait for you to read it then.
And I would think you talked about putting the wear on it. I would think you'd almost have to wait until you had a 3D print of it to really determine where you wanted the wear.
Yeah. And then also like, because even though like when I did the, you know, the mock-up kind of stuff for the Kickstarter or even showing off some of the stuff, you know, I would do a lot of the same wear, just kind of flipping stuff around just to get that idea. But like once I have all 10, because there's 10 figures total, well, before the Kickstarter, there's two new figures that are going to be offered in backer kit. Harbinger is one of them. And then we have an accessory pack as well, which I've shown. But total like boxed figures, 10. There's 10 of those. And so I want to, you know, have them all next to each other And like you said, yeah, you know, see where that wear is going to go. I got to put the stickers on. I got to do that. And I've actually been collecting and finding like real stickers or stuff that I can, you know, mess with or looking through, because I collect VHS tapes too. So, you know, just kind of getting a little bit of that lived in world of like nostalgia and fun, and add a little more to it.
Well, it's your brand is recognizable, and that's one of the most complimentary things I can say to someone.
Thank you.
And with the addition that you mentioned before, I think I shot you a message saying something like this. I know I put it up somewhere, but prop replica Devil's Piano. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I would love that, man. You did put that, and I laughed, and I was like, yes. And I'm working on a full size one right now, just as le like my decapitator that I showed at Retro Toy. I want at least something to take pictures with and something fun. And but yeah, man, a one to one, that would be so cool. So
Dude,
I'm never gonna say no to that stuff.
I think that booth candy is so important and something that people don't always hit, like whether it's a wrestling championship or the decapitator or whatever, to have an item that, you know, people can get the picture. It's almost like I always tell like newer bands, I tell them like you need to do a cover song, one cover song, because people will remember that cover song. They're not going to remember your original stuff the first time they see you, but they'll remember like that one song you covered, and that'll hook them in the head. And that same thing, having a prop or anything like that for people to engage with at the booth is so important. Like you got to show up with something that, well, like retail, you work retail, you know, you want to put it in the customer's hands. So anything that gets that physical engagement is such an important step.
It really is. It just
Awesome.
makes it fun. So.
Well, we are all following along closely with World War Hell. Backer, any ideas on when the backer kit? I guess it'll really depend on production and everything and how that all goes.
I'll be launching it, you know, and I've been saying this for a while. People are probably like, damn it, Chris, like you keep saying it's coming this month. But I just wanted to make sure everything was right first before, you know, we threw it out there for everybody. I actually had a meeting with BackerKit today just to kind of go over everything and make sure everything was like right. And I also was making sure Harbinger was good to go. You know, a lot of people, that's, it's funny that the figure that I didn't even offer in the Kickstarter is still like the one that gets the most questions. And like, where is it? Where is it? I need Steamboat. I need Steamboat. And I'm like, I know we do. We need a demon dressed as Steamboat Willie. I know we do. And so he's going to be part of that backer kit. So right now my goal is I would like to have it by next month, but at worst case scenario, be at Toylanta. It'll definitely be available because I want to have, we're going to have like a revamped booth, tweaking some stuff. I'm going to have this awesome diorama, by Jimmy, we're working on right now. And so backer kit, the booth, all the fun stuff. It's going to be, you know, I did that whole tour last year going through all the shows. And I know new people are coming out, but I want to make sure it's not like for, you know, people who've been supporting me from the beginning coming up to the booth and it's like, oh, it's the same stuff again, Chris. Like, I don't want that. I want it to be fun and exciting for everybody. So, yeah, Toyland is going to be a pretty damn cool time. So, if you guys get out there, you know, to come check it out and come see the booth and then backer kit for sure.
Well, I will definitely be there, and I've already got my list of I interviewed David Vonner a couple of weeks ago, and he's going to be at Toylanta again, and
David's
so
great.
my check-in list is, you know, between now and March is just going to keep growing, and I'm excited, man, because these show Brett's shows get bigger every time.
They do.
They just do. He's got this momentum between Joelanta and Toylanta that each one is just a level above the last one. So I can't wait, man. It's going to be a great weekend.
Yeah, last year's Toylanta, holy crap, like I was blown away just how big that show. I did not ex I knew it was going to be a good show, but like holy crap, like how big that show went. So I'm really looking forward to this year.
Yeah. He's got a path. Like that man has plans. He he's
Yes.
he yeah, he knows what's up.
Brett's amazing.
Well, with that check-in, I mean, really, we just got to get down to business now. We've gotten all of that out of the way. I think it is time for the 2026 Audible Rumble. But before we get to it, we got to explain some rules. So I just made this decision. I'm pretty sure I'm going to put this up on YouTube. We don't usually do this with our audio episodes, and we'll see how the Rumble goes, to how bedraggled and sweaty and miserable we are 30 entrants in. But this may be going up on YouTube, and at the very least, some clips will be going up. But I do need to explain the rules for anybody watching or listening, because it does get a little murky, because obviously we don't have 30 people here ready to actually hop in a wrestling ring. There's a bit of a fantasy element to this. So each of us have picked 10 entrants for a 30-person Rumble. These 10 entrants come from any corner of G.I. Joe history. Men, women, monsters, robots, all the way back to the beginning of G.I. Joe. Could be from cartoons, comic books, whatever. Anything is possible. The rules. In 2024, the winner was Rumbler, which was not planned at all. He was literally just entered as a joke because his name is Rumbler, right?
Yeah.
Ended up winning the whole thing. Last year's winner was Major Blood after some foul play. And this year we will find out who is the 2026 Rumble winner. So we have an initial roll to determine the order. Whoever rolls the highest will be the first entrant. When it's your turn, you will announce your entrant in whichever way you deem most entertaining. And then you will roll a six-sided die, and we have, we're not going to share them here, but we have a list of actions that whoever's turn it is will then describe. It'll be up to them to take the action to the ring and determine eliminations or whatever else may happen. And it's completely random. So we're all doing this off the top of our heads. Like, plans are going to go out the window. It will happen. So that's pretty much it. There's always a little bit of a learning curve as we go, but I think it's time to rumble. Are you guys ready?
Let's do it.
Everyone pick up your preferred dice and give it a roll, and we'll see who starts the rumble. I got a 3.
I got a 2.
Uh-oh. Got a 6.
Oh, Chris, the pressure is on you.
I get to start
out.
Okay.
I'll be in next, and that'll be our order as we go.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good. And so now I would roll again, right?
You'll announce who's coming out. Yep. Then once you've announced who it is, you'll roll to see what they do.
Perfect. All right. You know, the music begins, Kickstart My Heart starts playing, blaring through the speakers, you know, the lights go out, Motley Crue is actually there at the arena, jamming out, playing Kickstart My Heart. The Titantron explodes, toilet paper flies from the ceiling, everybody's like, what the hell's going on? And who walks out? Skidmark. Freaking, but not walking out. He drives the Desert Fox down the ramp, does a freaking spins out a little bit, and then dives into the ring. And now I have to spin.
Yes.
So, in his haste of getting into the ring, he realizes there's no one to eliminate. So he doesn't eliminate anybody, but he just celebrates, because why not?
Soaks in the adoration of the crowd.
Yes.
All right. Oh, and we're not doing, just to clarify for anybody who's listened before, we did a little sound effect between entries last time. It ate up a lot of time. We're not doing that this year. A little countdown sound effect that took 4 seconds too long. The familiar notes of the Cobra Imperial March ring out across the Colosseum. Yeah, we're in a Colosseum. Why not? Golden lights begin to sparkle all around, in a tempo that matches the Cobra Imperial March. And by the way, the Cobra Imperial March is, I want you, the listeners, to imagine which piece of music that is, because I had trouble determining what I thought might be the in-universe Cobra March. Two spotlights converge on the entryway, and out walks Cobra Commander in his glorious battle armor. He does a turn so everybody can take in the highest tech armor that anyone has seen, and sashays his way down to the ring. You can't see his face, but you can just tell from his body language he's throwing snarls at Skidmark. He has no respect for any opponent that might be in this rumble. As he slowly ascends the stairs into the top turnbuckle from the outside, we wonder, what will Cobra Commander do? And Cobra Commander rushes into the ring, taking Skidmark completely by surprise, gives him a clothesline, and sends him ass over tea kettle, over the top rope, and to the outside. Cobra Commander is victorious in his first conflict in this audible rumble.
No!
And that's how it goes sometimes.
I like it. I like it. That makes sense, though. It already makes sense.
Right, right. And sometimes it does like line up like, yeah, that works. All right, Christian.
All right. Well, Cobra Commander might be celebrating his victory, but a chill fills the air as the Coliseum air conditioner is cranked to full volume. Fake snow starts pummeling down. And what is that we hear? The theme song to Charles in Charge? But who could possibly enter to such an epic moment but Cold Front?
Wow. This is potentially going to be very humiliating for Cobra Commander.
Oh, but our good buddy Charles Coldfront overestimated the slickness of the fake snow because skis send him leaping over the ring, over the seats, and right outside into the street where he is hit by Skidmark. Driving away. In the Desert Fox. In shame.
So he's out?
He's out. He eliminated.
Oh my gosh. Cobra Commander. Again, you can't see his face, but you know he's cackling and celebrating in the ring, just soaking in the boos of the crowd that he takes as nothing but adulation.
Amazing. Oh, gosh. All right. The lights begin to dim, and then you see neon lights kind of flashing a little bit all over. Who could this be? As the Miami Vice theme starts playing. And who is it but Don Johnson, dressed as Lieutenant Falcon, walking down the ramp, hitting on multiple women, not getting anywhere with them, and just being a complete ass. Takes his time, and slides into the ring, looks at Cobra Commander, thinks about what he wants to do, and then you think, is this going to be some sort of weird alliance of Don Johnson, Lieutenant Falcon, and Cobra Commander? And yes, that's what just happened. They have become friends and are waiting for the next entrant. So I don't know what's going
on. Whoa! What a turn of events. So the lights go down again. There's going to be a lot of the lights go down tonight. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. and massive pyro starts going off across the front of the stage, and the opening chords of God of Thunder start playing. The pyro in tune with the music, two massive fire pots on either end of the stage going off, and then you hear from backstage, brum, 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 brum. Is Skidmark back with the Desert Fox? No, no, the curtains to the side of the entryway pull back, and the Thunder Machine comes growling into the Coliseum. Brum. And Thrasher driving the Thunder Machine with two unnamed Dreadnought babes hanging onto the sides. Pulls up as close as he can to the ramp, gets out of the Thunder Machine, and gives the old two-finger salute to the crowd. Boo! Boo! With a Dreadnought babe on either arm, Thrasher starts making his way down to the ring, spitting on the fans in attendance at ringside. What a disgusting display, but you couldn't expect anything less from this awful human being. So as he makes his way to the ring, the babes part and walk to either side of the ring, giving Cobra Commander and Lieutenant Falcon the stink eye, although one of them might have given Falcon a little bit of a wink. I don't know. Did the cameras pick that up? I'm not sure. So Thrasher slides into the ring, looks at both of his opponents, takes off his shoulder pads, does a little flexing, does a little dance, looks Falcon right in the eyes, looks Cobra Commander right in the eyes, spits in the middle of the ring, hops over the top rope, grabs his Dreadnought babes, and walks back to the Thunder Machine and leaves. Thrasher has eliminated himself from the Royal Rumble because we know he doesn't fare well in these situations. He can't just stand off to the side. So he left with his Dreadnought babes, and who knows what they're going to get up to tonight.
Well,
this is elimination wise, this is going better than any other year so far.
Right? Well, from the crowd, a voice screams out, "Screw you, Falcon! Stop flirting with me! And babes with Dreadnoughts? I want some respect for the women! Motley Crue, hit it!" All of a sudden, Dr. Feelgood starts blaring up from the seats, cartwheeling, somersaults, number 17, the spread eagle right into the ring. It's Dr. Sidney Biggles Jones.
Yes. Full lab coat, hopefully, and everything.
And
oh, for sure.
She looks at Falcon dead in the eyes as she takes her arms up and flexes for Railgun 1, mwah, Railgun 2, mwah, and just smacks the side of his head with both hands, squeezing until his blood vessels burst, and she flips him out of the ring. Looks at Cobra Commander, clotheslines him, smashes him with her elbow, and then takes her high heel boot and just rolls him right off onto the floor, knocking them both out. Poor women.
Amazing.
Fantastic. Well, that's what happens when, you know, Don Johnson and Cobra Commander try to make an alliance. yeah. All right. So, you know, surprise, surprise, guys. But the lights just dimmed. And what is that playing? It's not The Undertaker. It's nothing. It's not some creepy music. It's punk rock. It is Horror Business by the Misfits. And who could be coming out? But
crystal ball just comes up from out of the kind of Kurt Angle-esque coming up out, or I guess Cody Rhodes now, coming out of the stage, but with the green dire technology, the new mystical powers, but with the Misfits playing and full on with the white hair and his, you know, white temple hair and all the craziness going on with this man. He has this this green energy just coming off of him, and Dr. Bigglesworth there. It's a little Biggles Jones. I'm screwing it up. Yes. It's just like, what?
Bigglesworth is more pop culturally relevant because, quite frankly, Dr. Evil's cat is probably better known than most G.I. Joe characters.
True. I do know. I remember her little, you know, the whole run from, you know, what is it, 150? Somewhere in there with the Transformers in the 140s. I think Larry Hama forgot that about her actually being a double agent, which was pretty funny. Anyways, continuing, you know, slowly going down to the ring, Crystal Ball. He comes into the ring, looks over at the good doctor as the ring's engulfed in green fire. She's shocked. What is going on right now? A snake slithers out onto the ring. She tries to step on it, but it's not there. He blows green fire at her face. And she's just, as she looks over at him, he now has his hypno shield. As she looks at it, she's like completely hypnotized, not knowing what to do. But somehow she can't control her body as she now climbs completely out of the ring and eliminates herself, leaving Crystal Ball standing there victorious for a little while anyways.
This is moving right along.
I am Crystal Ball, this.
Only one in. This is wild. Okay. So flashing lights, real like rave situation here. The everything around the arena, just bright pink neon alternating with bright white, and Battle Without Honor or Humanity starts playing, if you know, from Kill Bill. And out walks Rising Sun Ninja Banzai from Ninja Force, complete with the pink mask and the awesome spatter paint pink pants on, doing all kinds of crazy martial arts stuff as he makes his way down to the ring. You could just know that Suzushi Slam is waiting for somebody in that ring. And since Crystal Ball is the only one there, it may just be for him. So with lots of showmanship and flair, a pair of nunchucks whirling all over the place, Banzai gets to those ring steps, looks at him, and then does a backflip from the floor into the ring. Amazing. Continuing the nunchuck action back and forth, the nunchucks are almost as dazzling as Crystal Ball's dire technology. It's almost a battle of flashiness between these two as they circle each other and wait for the next entrant.
Nice.
Ah, well, the next entrant is not far behind as Tub Thumping starts blasting from the sound system. What? I get down and I get knocked down and I get up again? But I don't recognize this G.I. Joe. Who is this middle-aged, slightly overweight woman? Is that Lucille Ostero? Oh, wait, no, that's just his ring girl. As Battle Force 2000's Knockout comes running to the ring with his girl who suffers from vertigo, he trips, he falls. She lifts him up. He keeps running. He trips and he falls again. I got this. She helps lift him up in the ring as his foot gets caught on the rope, and he's shaking it. And this is not a good showing for Battle Force 2000. He's supposed to be the fighter of the future. he realizes that between his vertigo and his just innate clumsiness, he may not necessarily have what it takes to take on anybody by himself. So he goes up to Crystal Ball and is like, I'll give you some Bitcoin. Here you go. What Crystal Ball doesn't know is it's actually 8 Bitcoin. But whatever, Crystal Ball falls for it. And we have our new tag team champions waiting for the next fighter.
Wow. What a team.
All right. Who is coming next is the question.
The lights don't dim this time, but a familiar song begins to just blare. The baby face to end all baby face rushes out of the curtain, shadow boxing, being ready, got the robe on him, and he looks up as Eye of the Tiger begins to play, and Rocky Balboa makes his way down to the ring.
Epic.
Beautiful.
Ready. Most times he's been an underdog, but he has been the champion so many times in the professional boxing ring. He is ready to try his hand again after getting beaten up by Thunderlips. He's ready to get back into that wrestling ring. And he climbs into the ring. And as he climbs up into the ring, he climbs through the ropes, looks at Crystal Ball, looks at Knockout. Knockout comes at him. Rocky swings, hits him right in the face. Knockout bounces off the ropes, comes back, headbutts Rocky. Blood rushes out of his nose. Oh no, flips out over the ring, eliminates Rocky.
Oh no! Nobody is looking good in this rumble, but that's okay because we're just here to entertain. Can you imagine, like, if this kind of stuff happens in the rumble on Saturday? Which, by the way, that's the timing of this is you know, WWE's rumble is Saturday.
Yes,
imagine this kind of stuff. It'd be amazing. Okay, back to the entryway and. Snow starts falling. More snow. Leftover
more snow.
Earlier from earlier. Yeah. Starts falling from the ceiling as Soulfinger by the Barcays starts playing. What could this mean? What this means is that 1989 Tundra Stalker is on his way to the ring, but he's not come empty-handed. He has his entire freaking kayak, and he's swinging it like No Mercy Nintendo 64 when you could get the giant beer can and just swing it. Yes. He's swinging the kayak like that beer can, running down to the ring. What an intimidating sight with Soulfinger accompanying him in the background. This is an amazing moment for Stalker. He slides into the ring, wailing that kayak all over the place, and he manages to catch. Oh, there are only so many people here, and I forgot to eliminate Knockout. Oh, no, wait, Knockout's still in.
Knockout's still in.
Knockout is still
not
in.
Not anymore, because Knockout catches that kayak right in the gut, and when he doubles over, Stalker brings the kayak down and swings it up, hitting Knockout right under the chin and knocking him right out of the ring.
Well,
woo.
With that, then no dimming lights, just immediately off in the corner. A stage rises up, and there's Satin singing a duet with Blondie Harry as Atomic fills the air, and in a mushroom cloud puff of smoke, there in the middle of the ring is Mike Powers, the Atomic Man.
Yes.
Amazing.
It is amazing.
Oh, and Mike Powers, with that incredible entrance, doesn't even know his own atomic strength because his mushroom cloud explosion has completely cleared the ring. Everyone's flesh just burns away. The crowd is screaming. Satin and Blondie are still playing their music. It is sheer chaos. This is what the Rumble is for.
Mike Power living up to his name.
That's a good spot. I'm okay with that. That's pretty good. Poor Crystal Ball, but yep.
A lot more death in this Rumble than one would expect.
I mean, it makes sense. It's a G.I. I mean, you put these guys together, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yep.
Plus, you said it was in a Coliseum, so this is just really...
Good point. Good point.
Well, as Mike Powers stands in the ring, cleared ring, that is, there's not even any music. It's just nothing. And out of the curtains, just classic curtains, just pushed out of the way as the Cobra Warlord, Sergeant Slaughter, the evil Sergeant Slaughter, wearing his World Domination Championship belt around his waist, looks down at Mike Powers. He's like, "You ready for this, maggot?" And he just marches down that way, gets into the ring, looks him down, full chin out with his beret. He's got a freaking grenade launcher on his back. I don't know if he was even allowed to bring that, but he's standing there looking down Mike Powers. And he just freaking elbow and then throws Mike Powers right into the turnbuckle. As he bounces off, he slips him into the Cobra Clutch, completely choking him out. Not realizing he has an atomic arm, it's no use to Sergeant Slaughter, this evil Sergeant Slaughter, who is so powerful, chokes him out, makes him pass out, realizing that's not an elimination. They both stay in the ring while Mike Powers is unconscious in the ring.
Nice, nice. All right. So the lights come down, and that gold starts glittering around the arena. That familiar gold that we've seen before. And then the familiar notes of that Cobra Imperial March, it starts back up. This doesn't make any sense. How could this be happening? And then Cobra Commander in his battle armor walks out onto the stage, but he doesn't look as confident as before. He doesn't look as sassy as before. Matter of fact, he's almost stumbling. And then from behind, another Cobra Commander in his 1982 battle helmet and his blue uniform. He's got his big staff and he whacks Cobra Commander in the back of the head. The battle armor Cobra Commander's helmet flies off. That's not Cobra Commander. That's Fred. Fred tried to take Cobra Commander's rightful place in this prestigious battle royal. This is the real Cobra Commander here to claim victory in the Audible Rumble. He picks his staff up, which has just a little bit of blood on it from the back of Fred's head, puts it under his arm and walks down to the ring, giving the Cobra Warlord a look, a knowing look. This was planned all along. This timing couldn't have been any more perfect. And it looks like Mike Power might be in trouble. Cobra Commander makes his way up the steps, one regal step after another, and the Cobra Warlord gives him a nod, walks over, and lifts the ropes up so Cobra Commander can get into the ring. And they both turn and look at Mike Power, who, powerful as he is, robotic arm though he may have, knows he is in trouble with two of the most evil beings on the planet sharing the squared circle with him, as they all wait for the next entrant.
Nice.
Well, the lights in the stadium, they don't dim. They go out. It is pitch black. except for that heavenly glow of the crowd with all their cell phones trying to see who our next combatant is. But they're very, very, very silent. Just everyone in the ring feels kind of a whoosh by behind them, because who needs lights when you're Jinx and you're trained to fight in the dark?
Yes.
And so, in the darkness, in the quiet darkness, Jinx goes up to Evil Sergeant Slaughter as she whispers in her ear, whispers in his ear, "It's always Nodder with Slaughter."
No!
Boom! Catapults him right out of the ring into the crowd, where the angry crowd is just tearing Evil Sergeant Slaughter apart. But also in the darkness, Jinx thought that she could execute a brilliant back brain kick into Cobra Commander. But he is a crafty little demon indeed, as he grabs Mike Powers and uses him as a human shield, not knowing where Jinx is going to attack from. And it just so happens that Jinx's brain kick hits that one nerve that causes all of Mike Powers' robotics to reset as his body just falls limp into the ring.
That's fantastic.
So he's still in. Mike Powers is still in.
Okay, he's still in. He just can't do anything.
He just busted up. Okay.
Yep.
So we've got Cobra Commander, Jinx, and Mike Powers still, correct?
Yep.
That's who we've got still in the ring. Okay.
Yes.
So the red lights begin to flash. You look over at the entrance stage as "I Ran So Far Away" by Flock of Seagulls begins to play. And who could this be? Who could be coming out? But no, nothing happens at the entrance stage. An actual pool of water lifts up into from the crowd as Kraken flies out of this pool, dives like face first into the ring. But you think he's going to hit, but he rolls in, lands up, has his net, throws his net, covering poor Mike Powers, who's already just kind of laying there. Doesn't really do a whole lot. And then stands there like he's done a lot of, like he accomplished something. He's kind of a ridiculous fish man, so who knows what he's doing. Now he's just waiting for the next guy, so.
Immediately, the opening notes of Metallica's "For Whom the Bell Tolls" start playing, filling the Coliseum with heavy metal thunder. And Firefly walks out onto the entrance stage. He's got a bag. He's got a bag under his arm. He runs down to the ring. He's not wasting any time. And before he gets in the ring, Firefly affixes landmines to all four corners of the ring. The top turnbuckle, each one now has a landmine. This has turned into an exploding time bomb match. Firefly slides into the ring, looking to see who his first victim is going to be. He glances at Cobra Commander, knowing that that's one of his employers. He looks at Jinx. He looks at Kraken, the crazy fish person who, quite frankly, is making him a little nervous. And he grabs Jinx by the wrists, swings her around, hitting Cobra Commander, who flies back into one of the landmines, which explodes, turning Cobra Commander into a fine red mist. Then Jinx's feet hit the Kraken, who also gets thrown into a landmine and turned into a fine red mist. And then Firefly lets go of Jinx's wrists, and she goes flying into a third landmine, turning into a third fine red mist. The ring has been cleared, but is now covered with blood, and a single landmine remains in the far turnbuckle from the camera. But Firefly stands alone, drenched in blood, and the smoke from the explosions has filled the Colosseum.
Is Mike Powers still alive? Did Mike Powers make it still?
Oh wait, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, that I got clear the ring. So that he Firefly realizes that there's a guy under a fishing net laying in the corner, walks over, picks up the fishing net, and throws Mike Power at the last landmine, detonating it. And then after Mike Power explodes, Firefly picks up his robot arm and stands at the ready, waiting for whoever is going to enter the rumble next. I forgot about
Mike that. Well, that combination of four minds not only exploded the turnbuckles, but also a main water hose, as this torrent of water is shooting up towards the ceiling like the Freddy Krueger Johnny Depp bed scene.
So much water, so many liquids in this match.
It's so messy.
And something is swimming upstream through that water. Something metallic? Is that a shark? This giant robotic shark comes out of the water, opens its gigantic mouth, and like the birth of Venus, the eel version 2 comes out ready to take on Firefly.
I think that is exactly how they deploy too. That sounds
yes,
right.
In my head canon.
It's like Roger Moore in The Alligator.
And he looks at Firefly, gives him that knowing wink behind the goggle that no one else can see. Firefly knows. Let's do this. Let's team up and win this match for Mother.
I gotta say, I'm nervous at this point because so far these team ups have not gone well.
No. Well, the music starts. I there's a lot of bad guys in that ring, so I think it's time for a good guy. And feeling so good today by Boo Williams, I can't talk, starts playing. And who other could come to that music but Jean-Claude Van Damme, Guile, dancing like kickboxer down the ring, ready to take on Firefly in the Eel Volume 2. As he's walking down the ring, he grabs the robotic shark, ripping it in half with his bare hands, looking at both of these two before he gets in the ring, like they're in trouble and there's probably going to be splits involved. So what happens? He does a front flip into the ring, landing in a split, getting back up while still dancing to his entrance music, takes Firefly, uppercuts him completely into the stands. I don't know where he even landed. He might still be in the air. We don't know. And before the eel can take and run, he does the craziest split style kick you've ever seen. Like he's like a T, like on its side as he kicks and does this roundhouse kick, knocking off the eel's head clean off, standing victoriously in a split while waiting for the next entrant.
We've had no buildup whatsoever in this. No. One. This is amazing. Okay. So, believe it or not, once again, the gold starts descending from the ceiling, and that Cobra Imperial March plays one more time. How can this be? This makes no sense. And look, Battle Armor Cobra Commander is back on the entrance stage. What is going on? But this one, this Battle Armor Cobra Commander looks a little more sleek. The armor is a little more streamlined. And you can almost make out behind the visor, the clear faceplate, there's something wrong. There's something not quite human about this Cobra Commander's eyes. He makes his way down to the ring, looking a little more serpentine than even Cobra Commander tends to look. This is clearly something a little bit different than what we've seen so far tonight. And of course, once he gets to the ring, he slides in like a snake. Slowly stands up and looks Jean-Claude Van Damme right in the eyes. Well, really, he's looking at the top of his flat top because Van Damme's like 5'4", but they make eye contact. And this Cobra Commander, shocking everyone, extends a hand to Jean-Claude Van Damme. JCVD looks around at the crowd. What do I do? This is a bad guy. This is not only a bad guy, but there's something inhuman lurking behind that faceplate. I don't know what to do here, but we're the only two out here. So I guess I gotta take that hand. And as they shake hands, the Coliseum erupts. So much noise at this unexpected development.
I love it.
And with that, American patriotic band type music starts playing. It's time to even the score, boys. As our female figure, cloaked in her robe, comes running down. Still robed, she jumps up on what's left of the exploded, barely there, turnbuckle. Let's get this party started. Throws off her robe as the Runaways' Cherry Bomb starts playing. And ladies and gentlemen, Bomb Strike has entered the ring.
Nice.
Oh, however, she made a mistake by trying to be impressive and pose on one of those barely existent, not really there turnbuckles as it gives way. And she loses her balance for a split second. But that split second is all it takes for that very strange Cobra Commander to take advantage, grab her, swing her around, and as the traitorous foe he is, thinks that he can knock Jean-Claude Van Gaal out of the ring by using Bomb Strike's body. But oh no, for she, as tough as she is still just human. And you hear her spine snap Batman versus Bane as the Lifeline and Medic come rushing to take her out and get her some surgery.
You know, just as a quick aside, we've spent almost 6 years now talking about how we like G.I. Joe being family friendly and we don't like the like overly violent, too edgy G.I. Joe. And here we are slaughtering literally every competitor in this rumble.
What is this wrong is my kind of
too
thing.
Much celebrity death match growing,
you know what?
Up.
This is in honor of World War Hell and the gore and the grit. This is definitely playing to the guests' tone. All right, let's continue.
Well, we have just Jean-Claude Van Damme Guile, or Jean-Claude Van Guile, which I like, and Cobra Commander, Snake Cobra Commander, in the ring, still with a bit of a shaky alliance. It's still a little bit there, realizing, I don't know, they're both looking down. But who is this? Who's going to come down and try to take that Cobra Commander out? But Sergeant Slaughter walks out again, but this time not the Cobra Warlord, the real red, white, and blue American hero we've all grown up cheering and loving. He has completely seen his ways. Being eliminated before, he has now realized, I am supposed to be the good guy. Walks out to the ring, gets in there, looks at Guile, you should know better, buddy. Then looks at Cobra Commander, and then he picks up Cobra Commander over his head and completely just rips the poor snake armored man in half, throwing one across outside the ring and then the other side across the ring. And Guile's like, whew, I'm glad I didn't mess with this guy. And then Sergeant Slaughter looks at him and he's like, no, Maggot, I'm not done with you, buddy. You shook hands with the enemy. I can become a good guy again, but you cannot. As he then also does a split just to mimic Jean-Claude Van Damme, just to piss him off, and uppercuts him through the roof, and nobody knows what happened to him. So now Sergeant Slaughter just in the ring.
Oh, amazing. So Sergeant Slaughter has a little bit of time before the next entrant comes in. He has cleared the ring effectively, and it can be seen just to camera right that Cobra Commander's upper body is still moving around because he is a snake. Being torn in half did not kill him. It just eliminated him from the rumble. So we see that upper body pulling itself to the back. And then as we're watching that nauseating spectacle, what's that? It's the Wolfpack theme. NWO Wolfpack? What in the world is going on here? And Gristle walks out onto the stage, hair greased up, that little spit curl pulled real tight, the sunglasses on. He's even got a toothpick in his mouth. Walks out, does the old Razor Ramon walk, walks up to the camera, pulls out that toothpick, says, hey, yo, puts the toothpick back in his mouth, looks at Sergeant Slaughter, walks around the ring, sizing up the biggest and most powerful member of the G.I. Joe team. Really, if we're being honest, probably the most important Joe that's ever been part of the team. I mean, nobody's better than Sergeant Slaughter. It's a literal truth, and Gristle is aware of that. So Gristle looking just skeezy. Actually, Gristle is wearing his complete upper gear, like his normal gear, but then wrestling trunks and knee pads from the waist down, just looking skeezy. slides into the ring, leans on the corner, the decimated, burned, charred, still smoking, and also blood-covered corner turnbuckle, and gestures for a microphone. If somehow there's still people alive around this ring and somebody brings them a microphone, Gristle saunters up to Sergeant Slaughter, looks up at him because Slaughter is a good head taller than Gristle. Pulls his toothpick out of his mouth, and Slaughter, knowing what's coming, says, don't you? And before he can finish, Gristle whops him upside the head with the microphone, flicks the toothpick in his face, and throws Slaughter over the top rope. Unbelievable. What a dirty scumbag Gristle is. I can't believe what just happened. And now Gristle is in the ring by himself, looks at the camera, does the gesture, says, run it back. And the Wolfpack theme starts playing again as Gristle waits for the next entrant.
Oh, God.
Well, one scumbag deserves another. As Pirate Metal Drinking Crew by L Storm starts blaring, pyrotechnics are going off. Out of the ramp comes the Dreadnought Burnout. His hair is oily and greasy. He's got on his dirty, stained tank top walking down to the ring, just talking all kind of smack to Gristle. The worst yo mama jokes we haven't heard since the playground in 1982. Jumps up in the ring, grabs his tank top, and he's going to give it the old Hulk Hogan. And he's tearing from one side to the other. But like most dreadnoughts, he forgot to pre-put holes in it, and he's just not strong enough, so he just kind of stops and looks at Gristle and is like, I don't need to take my clothes off to whoop you. And with that, Gristle reaches up to his face, yanks the skin off, and says, but I can take my faces off because underneath, Burnout, underneath Burnout's face is that Stalker? And Stalker is now beating Gristle, just smacking him with Burnout's face. But then he takes his other hand and he rips off Stalker's face. And lo and behold, it's Agent Faces. Just pummeling away at Gristle, giving him the old guy smasheroo. Gristle is stunned, falling over backwards as Faces walks up and just shoves those two prosthetics into Gristle's mouth, just shoving them down there so he can't breathe until he passes out, and Faces throws him out of the ring to stand victorious.
Well, he's not victorious yet because not this rumble must go on.
And what's that music that hits? Well, that's weird. The Breaking Bad theme. Who could this be? As a drugged out headman casually starts walking down, kind of just pimp walking down the freaking arena with his zoot suit, you know, what he's got going on. Sitting there throwing out bags of meth to the fans. Like, what is this guy doing? And then slides into the ring, hits his pipe, and looks at him. And now what does he do? He looks at Agent Faces. And being in the weird state that he's in on all of these drugs, and say no to drugs, kids, he decides to take Face's face off to see if he's another character under there. Nope. Sorry. Faces drops to his knees. It is now just a skeleton and blood, and dies in the ring. Said man stands victorious over Agent Faces.
Oh, man. All right. What is happening? Okay. So the gold glitter once again starts dropping down in the Coliseum. But this time, it's not the Cobra Imperial March. No, Duran Duran's Union of the Snake starts playing. But it is Cobra Commander in his most regal uniform with the red visor. That's right, how we first saw him in Cobra La. Long, long ago, this is the real Cobra Commander. This is the OG original Energon Universe Cobra Commander here to do some business. And he's not messing around. This is a more serious Cobra Commander. This Cobra Commander, as fancy as his gear is here to do the work. He's here to put the damage on, runs down to the ring, and doesn't waste a second. Clotheslines headman right out of the ring, and for good measure picks up Agent Face's bloody skeleton and throws it over the top rope too, because you can never be too sure in the audible rumble.
All right. So, over the PA, a voice shouts out, "You all are insulting the art of wrestling. You have made a joke of this day, and it is time to get serious. No music, no pyro." Down the ramp comes Cobra Claws in his gleaming gold mask and one very ticked off attitude. Walking towards the man who owns the organization that pays his paycheck.
You're right.
But this has just been too silly of a day. And Cobra Claws looks at Cobra Commander and says, "My liege, we cannot allow the Joes or these jokers to insult us anymore. It is time to take it into the final round and show them the majesty of what Cobra stands for." So Cobra Claws and Cobra Commander shake hands and team up back to back, ready to take on our next assailant.
Okay, that worked out nicely.
It worked out really well. Well, so the final entrant for my faction is now, you hear the music. What is that? Is that Black Betty by Ram Jam? Okay, who could this be? And you look up to the rafters. Is that Shawn Michaels? Is he going to come down on a rope? Coming down to the ring? No, that's not Shawn. Wait, that's Bullet Man as he flings down face first, head first, flying to the ring at a crazy speed. And he goes completely through Cobra Commander, ripping him in half. And then coming up outside, still flying somehow, really just gliding with style, comes up, somehow turns around, is on another rope, and comes back down, taking out the Cobra Claws, ripping him in half as he goes through him as well, and then landing with a somersault onto his feet, standing up, helmet shiny, besides all the blood all over it, victorious in the ring.
That is the greatest entrance in our Joe Rumble in the history of Joe Rumbles.
That is perfect. So, Bullet Man has a little time to clean the gore off of his bullet. So he's in the ring doing a little posing, doing a little cleaning up. When the lights go down again, probably not for the last time, and a discordant guitar note rings out through the Coliseum, and Jerry Only walks out onto the stage. Doyle Wolfgang von Frankenstein joins him. And this is just how it's got to go. And they start playing Horror Business. But instead of the instead of the regular lyrics, it's being sung in Georgian, the country, not the state. And Horror Show walks out. What? How is this even possible? The last time we saw Horror Show was in the 2024 Audible Rumble when he was the last competitor with Rumbler and then disappeared. But somehow now he's back, accompanied by the evil forces of the Misfits. Horror Business plays, and you notice as the lights hit him, Horror Show has a big skull painted on his face and a devil lock hanging down in front. And he lets out a mighty roar and runs down to the ring and probably freaking eliminates himself the way this thing has been going.
I mean, that's pretty epic.
He runs down to the ring, takes a look at Bullet Man, and then runs his fingers through the paint on his face, reaches up, draws a skull on Bullet Man's bullet, gives him a nod, and turns to wait for the final entrant in the Audible Rumble.
So they stand there. All of a sudden, the entire Coliseum starts to shake. The ground is rumbling with this vibration, and it's coming from below. It's specifically coming from the center of the ring as if four landmines and all these bodies exploding could not have any adverse effect on the planet whatsoever. A hole opens up, just darkness, as an oversized green claw boom, comes out. A second claw choom, comes out, and pulling himself up with this mighty chest strength is Gore, King of the Terrans, looking at everyone annoyed that he finally found peace since the 70s when Super Joe was disbanded and they would finally just leave him alone. But no, all this music, all these vibrations have shaken his underground kingdom, and he is ready to let loose with some revenge. And with his mighty roar,
oh boy,
he grabs Bullet Man, because all he can tell is the shape of the bullet makes like a spear, and he takes it and he pummels Bullet Man into Horror Show, just constantly saying, "Be quiet," as Horror Show is just this bloody pulp that just kind of gets sprayed away by this water that is still trickling from all the water combatants earlier. Gore sets Bullet Man down next to him without even really realizing that that was a person, and the fight isn't over yet.
Oh, wow.
That was pretty good. So it did Horror Show, is Horror Show still alive?
Horror Show's eliminated.
Out.
It's down to Bullet Man and Gore. So yeah, Gore. Just roll and see what you do.
So Bullet Man shaken, realizing he had just been used for a weapon. But I'm pretty sure Bullet Man has some special, you know, add-ons to his structure of some sort, because he hasn't broken his neck yet. So he can still do these things. And as he looks over at Gore and he says, "Buddy, nobody kills anybody with my head but me." Goes to jump on the turnbuckles that are missing somehow, yells at somebody, "Throw me my rope!" The rope comes back down, swings down. He grabs onto it. It's almost like a reverse sting. Picked back up into the rafters. Hooks back up. Comes back down. And oh, it looks like he's gonna go right through Gore. Gore sidesteps. He goes past him. He's now, oh no, comes back down. Gore's just, he just wants, you know, quiet. He's tired of this crap. Looks over. Goes to punch Bullet Man as he's coming through, but Bullet Man, no. He dodges the fist, misses again. It's what's gonna happen? We don't know. Flings back around. This time, lands in the crowd. No, he can't. Sorry. Back up. Reverse. Comes back up. Lands in the ring. Looks at Gore, and he says, "Hey, man. What if we just turn the music down and you go back, you get out of here?" He's like, "Yeah, sure." Gore just goes back home. He doesn't want to fight any more people. So he eliminates himself. Bullet Man's like, "You know what? It's cool." Stands there, wins in the most anticlimactic way possible.
You know what? I think it's great that we end the night not on another murder.
I felt, you know, true. It felt wrong. Actually. He was tired of the sound, you know?
So the 2026 Audible Rumble winner is Gore, King of the Terror. No, I'm sorry.
No.
Bullet Man convinced Gore to leave. Yes.
It was so in my head that Gore was going to win just because it was so ridiculous that he was just cranky that I let that get away from me. No, the winner of the 2026 Audible Rumble is Bullet Man.
He used his head. He used his head, but without violence this time, you know? So it's a step in the right direction.
As a gesture of I don't even know what, the surviving ring personnel bring him Cobra Warlord's championship, which got thrown out to the crowd at some point, and drape it over Bullet Man's shoulder. So he is not only the winner of the Rumble, but also the world domination champion.
Yes.
Wow. Absolutely amazing.
That was fun.
So we definitely, so last year we didn't have enough eliminations. This year, too many eliminations. We'll find that happy medium. Although I will say, the eliminations, very satisfying this year.
They were.
Yeah.
They were.
I could not be happier with the winner. I am loving this very
much. That Bullet Man winning is definitely like on theme for Audible Interlude. Mm-hmm. Like that's,
it's pretty fun.
Well, and the final two being Bullet Man and Gore. I mean, that's just perfect. So that is your 2026 Audible Rumble. Which brings us to our last segment. It's time to close this show down. We do a little segment called Knowing is Half the Babble, where each of us gets a little bit of time to talk about something that may not even be G.I. Joe related. I'll kick this off because mine is kind of basic. We've been talking about it a lot, but I just want to encourage everybody, check out the Dreadnought War, the 5-issue story arc from the Energon universe. It is absolutely awesome. I mean, read all of it. Read everything. Read the Joe comic. Read Void Rivals. Read Transformers. It's all fantastic. But if you can jump in at the Dreadnought War and really get a taste of what's going on, I think, and our reviews of Dreadnought War are available wherever you get your podcast. So go check those out. It's just, they're firing on all cylinders with that Energon Universe stuff. It's absolutely fantastic. And our review of G.I. Joe number 18, the first appearance of Roadblock in the Energon universe, is available right now wherever you get your podcast. So check that out as well. And man, it's fun. Noel wasn't there for that one either, but Christian and I handled it, and I think we had the best time reviewing that one. Not because Noel wasn't there, but just because it was such a great issue. Yeah, it's really a lot of fun.
I gotta get back in reading those, because I read Cobra Commander, Red Duke. I picked up most of the books, and I got behind. I haven't caught back to them, but I really enjoyed what I was reading, so I need to go back to them.
That's what happens with me. Like that's why I'm glad we're reviewing them, because that's with comics. I'll keep up for a while, and then I won't have time, or one thing or another will happen, and before I know it, I've got like 12 issues. Well, we just had this conversation about Void Rivals. That my mind was blown. I'm like 15 issues behind, and I didn't even realize. It's just tough to keep up.
It is.
So, Chris, did you have anything to throw out there for Knowing is Half the Babble?
I just opened the new Mondo Ghostbuster Peter Venkman, which was very freaking cool.
Oh man.
It's really fun. I know this is audio, and I was showing you guys stuff earlier, but man, I'll just show you him right here. It's super fun. Just, it's like it came right out of the cartoon.
That's beautiful.
Mondo does great work. I mean, they're not cheap, but man, if you're going to have like one real Ghostbusters figure, like he comes with a little Slimer, you know, you got I didn't get the deluxe. I didn't need the big ghost, you know, I think it's Sam Hain, right? And just great though. Great figures, and the paint really just feels like the matte paint they use and everything is fantastic. So
yeah, I got their that first 1/6 scale Scare Glow that they did, and then I got one of their Gilman figures, and I mean it's just all, it's top notch, it's beautiful stuff. But yeah, those Ghostbusters, I was just like, I can't do it. The price, because I would have to have all of it.
Yeah.
I would have, because that's been my complaint with every time somebody does Ghostbusters, they never do the ghosts. Whether it's real Ghostbusters or whatever, people just don't do the ghosts, which is insane to me. Mm-hmm. And now Mondo's doing the ghosts, but I was like, I can't make that investment. I can't jump into that.
It's so much. I would have liked the ghosts, but the fact that it's
You gotta pick and choose.
I was like, I'm just going for the core team, I think. And then I'm like, that's good. It's still freaking expensive, but
Yeah. But it's, I mean, it's, there are a lot of factors that go into that, but cool to see it.
Yeah.
Christian, what do you got?
Okay. So mine is, ironically, shouting out another voice actor, because I was having a conversation with Rexship about Valor versus Venom the other day, and I've been going back and watching. It's rough. One of these days, we're gonna have to do an episode about all the different studios that have touched G.I. Joe, but Jinx in Valor versus Venom, I was like, man, her voice, there's something familiar about it. I just can't put my finger on it. So, of course, I had to deep dive. And the voice actress's name is Venus. And I'm so sorry if I pronounced this wrong. Terzopolis? Come to find out, she is also the voice of Jean Grey in X-Men Evolution, which is, questions asked, the greatest X-Men cartoon ever made.
Good.
Yeah, I agree.
She is the voice of Black Rachnia in Beast Wars, who I always thought was Cree Summer. No, it's her. And she voices the female Ranma Sawatome in Ranma One Half, which is like my second favorite anime ever. So I'm thinking that's where I picked up like, oh, I recognize this voice. So when I was looking at everything that she has worked on, it's like every minus Masters of the Universe, it seems like every good popular IP out there, she has done something for. And so shout out to Venus, because you're amazing.
I love that discovery of like the person that sort of spans the fandoms. Like, that's always really fun seeing that.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, that is all the show we got for you this week. I hope everybody enjoyed the Audible Rumble. We'll be back next year with a new installment. Our music is by Andy Samford of electricminnowmusic.com. Check us out on Instagram at Audible Interlude Podcast. Christian, where can we find that toy photography you do so well?
You can find me on Instagram and Blue Sky under the name Legion Cub.
And Chris, where can we find you online and what are you up to?
You can find me at Grindhouse Toys on Instagram, and then also just Grindhouse Toys on Facebook. And go check out World War Hell. It's still late pledging on Kickstarter, and I'll have Backer Kit up pretty soon.
Awesome. You can catch us live on the Needless Things YouTube channel on February the 2nd. Put it on your calendar. And until then, Yo Joe
Cobra Rumble.
You have been listening to a Needless Things production. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for the very best in toys, movies, music, and pop culture. Until next time, be kind and like what you like.